Utah knows what it means to be earthquake ready.
Epicenter Magna, Utah, was 5.7.
Today, Dave and Dejanovic mark the 2024 Great Utah Shakeout. Listen this hour as Be Ready Utah joins Dave and Debbie for the preparation and planning your family needs for the next emergency on KSL News Radio.
Happens at 10:15 this morning here at Evergreen Junior High and schools all across Utah, and also businesses. We will be drop, covering, and holding on, because that is the earthquake drill that the Division of Emergency Management wants us all to remember today at 10:15.
It's important because we know stop, drop, and roll. If we ever catch on fire, it's probably far more likely that we'll be in an earthquake here in Utah. But drop, cover, hold on. It's a great way to remember how to stay safe during an earthquake.
So we're going to have lots of great usable tips for your family today. In the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be going in depth with the Division of Emergency Management on the top three things you need to do to prepare for an earthquake. Then we will be participating in the drill. I can't wait for Dave to drop, cover, and hold on to the plastic table we have set up here in the hallway at Evergreen Junior High in the Granite District. Also looking forward to a live conversation with the Granite School District spokesman about what happened to Westlake Junior High. You might remember we had a significant amount of damage happen to that Westside Junior High School back in March of 2020. It had to shut down. It was basically condemned. It was unsafe after that earthquake. So we're going to check on the progress of that. Dave, I've also been speaking to a structural engineer who reached out to me a couple of weeks ago after the New Jersey, New York shaker that happened. And he said, Deb, we're building so much safer nowadays that his goal is to make sure people don't feel scared to be inside buildings. So he's going to walk us through what structural engineers are doing in Utah to make our buildings, you know, stay upright during an earthquake.
Yeah, during an earthquake here in Utah, the damage happened with unreinforced masonry, URM. This is a thing. They know about it. But it's basically where they were just stacking bricks on top of each other.
That's long ago, though.
We don't do that anymore.
No, that's so long ago.
And even once we started to reinforce these things, we have learned so much about seismology and earthquakes that we truly can build resilient buildings.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing from an actual engineer and an expert on this who's been inside these buildings, and he knows exactly what to do. And I'm looking forward to feeling safer inside buildings once we talk to him. Again, we're live at Evergreen Junior High, so if you hear the background noise, what are you listening to?
I want to say it's a simulated earthquake. I think they're getting everybody ready for the Great Utah Shakeout.
Good.
So you would think that it was the morning announcements, but I think it's getting them ready for the Great Shakeout.
While we wait for the Great Shakeout drill, which happens at 10:15 this morning, let's get to our top local story.
Dave and Dejanovic. Special coverage of the top local story.
It sounds like we may know as early as this afternoon. It probably will happen during Jeff Kaplan's afternoon news this afternoon, so I'm a bit jealous. We're going to find out if the Board of Governors at the NHL signs off on the deal to bring NHL to SLC, Dave.
And this is enormous. It's the worst kept secret also in America right now. We know this is going to happen. Everything is pointing in the right direction. But you have to have several things happen. Number one, willing owner and a willing seller. We have both of those with the Arizona Coyotes and Ryan Smith and the Smith Entertainment Group. But you have to have the NHL jump on board as well. And that's where the NHL Board of Governors have to approve, say, okay, we got the buyer, we got the seller, we have to bless this.
Did you hear how the Coyotes ended their final season in Phoenix, actually in Tempe? Let's listen to the chants from the crowd. Can you hear that?
I'm very good at crowd chants.
What did they say?
Salt Lake sucks. Okay, that was Sam Farnsworth with KSL Television. He went down for the final game.
And captured that audio.
And captured that. And, Debbie, let's be very clear here. There's going to be a blood feud between Phoenix and Salt Lake for eternity now.
Adam Small, back in the newsroom, at the mothership for us. You're navigating what's going on with the NHL. What can you tell us, Adam?
Well, Debbie, Dave, I can tell you that mean, so many insider reports here over the last few days. It's been an absolutely crazy week. The latest one is from Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman, who says the NHL's Board of Governors is expected to meet today, 1 o'clock our time. And he says they're not only just expected to vote, they're expected to approve not only the sale of the Coyotes to Jazz owner Ryan Smith, but also their relocation to Salt Lake City. The Board of Governors is the final say in the NHL of any either expansion or, in this case, relocation. So we're expecting in just a matter of hours to have two sports in the Big Four North American sports right here in Salt Lake City.
Adam, is there a sense or an indication? I mean, this isn't my money, but do we know how much the Coyotes are going to cost us?
So the reports that I have seen, so Ryan Smith is reportedly bucking up $1.2 billion to buy the Coyotes franchise. So $1 billion is for the franchise, and then the other $200 million is for the relocation fee. And if you need any indication also that the Board of Governors is probably going to okay this, not only are you getting a better stadium situation, you've got a stadium that's ready for hockey, they all get a cut of that $200 million relocation fee. So all the other 32 owners have free money headed to their pockets this afternoon if they approve this.
I'm just looking at this Sportsnet story that dropped on this, looks like about 13 hours ago, last night at 10:15, and it says 3 p.m. Eastern time, so that confirms my question. Unfortunately, the announcement will not be happening during the David Dejanovic show, Adam, but I'm sure we're going to be all over it this afternoon. You're going to be keeping an eye on it as well for us. Thanks so much for the update. And this sounds like it's a done deal. Dave, what are your thoughts?
This is great news for the sports world. Whether it truly does revitalize downtown, there are some question marks there. But as far as the sports landscape and what it means to bring another major league professional team to Utah, this is monumental. And it's something as just shocking, quite honestly, because there's been so many hopes and dreams wrapped around getting an NFL team, first of all, a baseball team. Hockey really flew under the radar, and it wasn't until Ryan Smith came in and started whispering about a year ago to see it happen this quickly that we could have NHL in October is absolutely shocking.
Well, here's my hot take. I think this is happening way too fast for a lot of residents' taste in the downtown Salt Lake City area. I am going to read you off. I will rattle it off as quickly as possible. The long list of things that need to be accomplished by August. There's this deadline that City Hall and the owner of the new NHL team have to get in place by August. It almost sounds impossible. Stick around. Weigh in. Tell us if you think that this is just too rush for your taste, too. That's next.
It's the Great Utah Shakeout. Dave and Debbie are live from Evergreen Junior High in the Granite School District on KSL News Radio.
We'll be keeping an eye on the clock at 1 o'clock this afternoon when the NHL Board of Governors meets, expected to approve and finalize the deal to get NHL pro hockey to Salt Lake City from Arizona. It turns out the Coyotes wrapped up their season last night, and the crowd went wild, not only for the Coyotes, but for their hate of Salt Lake City. Let's listen.
Now, if you can't put that together, if you don't hear chants and can't, what do they say? They're saying Salt Lake sucks, which tells you this is a blood feud now between Arizona and Utah.
It's too late.
Losing your team is the ultimate slap in the face, Debbie. Imagine if we lost the Utah Jazz to anybody, we would never forgive that city, that state. It would be a blood feud, which is exactly what it is. Which really speaks to how big of a deal it is for us to give this team.
This is going to be a really fast process. So if you think that you're going to be showing up at the public hearing on May 21st, which is when the Salt Lake City Council has set that public hearing, they traditionally take input on big decisions. Public has a chance to weigh in. But if you think you're going to go there with your flow charts and your environmental studies to sway the city council's decision, Look, for 35 years, I have covered public hearings, and it is very rare that public input sways decisions like this. Not suggesting you don't show up and voice your concerns, but this is being fast-tracked, my friends, in a big way that City Council has to basically have a bow on this, the city does, Salt Lake City does, and submit it to the state by September 1st. And that includes any rezoning plans. So anything that needs to be rezoned will be done by this summer. All the plans will be set in place. Everything has to be in motion in short order for this to happen. Remember, the state legislature really set down the guidelines on this and the rules, and now it's up to the city to run around and get this done, along with newest NHL owner by this afternoon, Ryan Smith.
Which I think really explains why the legislature had to move so quickly. They had to get things in place. They obviously knew something that we didn't. They knew that this was far more likely than we thought originally. So to have these things put in place back in February and March has opened up this opportunity. And now that this team is available, now that the Arizona Coyotes can be purchased, you have to strike when the iron is hot. And it is red hot right now.
But for residents, this is very rushed. And I
totally
think it feels very, very uncomfortable to a lot of people. Not everybody. There's going to be a lot of people who are excited about getting a team, getting a new stadium, getting new restaurants, getting, you know, usable Wi-Fi in these stadiums, all those things. But for a lot of folks who are going to be impacted by this, or let me look, wait a minute, hold on, put the brakes on this. Dave, I've just pulled up a website. It's called buildingsaltlake.com. Can I list for you all of the things that have to be accomplished in the next couple of months on the part of the city to get the goals that the legislature has spelled out in that Senate bill that ended up passing to approve the 0.5% sales tax increase in order to help fund this project. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm going to run out of breath. But here's what buildingsaltlake.com lists. And this is a massive grocery list. This is like when you're going to Costco for a two-month supply of all things that you need. They need to get a financial plan in place, a land use plan in place, public asset plan in place, a public safety plan in place. That means, you know, cops and fire and all that other stuff. A homelessness mitigation plan in place. I mean, the city hasn't been able to really totally deal with that on its own to begin with. That'll be curious to see how they're able to. Homeless mitigation plan. Transportation plan in place. A parking plan in place. A provision that local government may not provide a direct subsidy. Maximum dollar amount that may be used for the benefit of the project participant, which is the team, right, or the owner. A clear description of what fund and revenues uses will be used or not considered for the benefit of the project and subject to the limit. Terms related to breach of the agreement. I mean, all of these things in place, government traditionally moves ever so slowly. If you've maybe ever try to get a building permit, or, you know, you need to talk to somebody or get on an agenda at City Hall. You know, it moves slowly. Not for this.
As you were listing that, I couldn't help but think there's no way they can take into account public opinion. There's so many ideas, and there's probably some great ideas from the public. But practically speaking, as you were listing this out, this has to be almost rubber stamped by the professionals.
And I feel like it is.
It is.
Yeah, I feel like it is. There's a lot that was going on, in my view, behind the scenes before the plan to fund it was ever unveiled on Capitol Hill, because this is not just stuff that lawmakers stand up and announce that they're going to do without some sort of discussion beforehand. And now they've got to fast track this to meet the deadline before fall. It feels like there has to have been some stuff going on behind the scenes in order to make this happen this quickly.
The master plan has changed massively in this state, because we have master plans and we have
no idea
looking 5, 10, 20 years out. This is, speaking of earthquakes, this is the big one. This is one that will shake up downtown.
Here's what's crazy about it to me. We have really no insight at all about where this is going to happen. We don't know where they're going to drop the backhoes and start digging. You know, we don't know how big it's going to be. How many city blocks are going to be swooped up on this? How many, if there are going to be historical buildings impacted by this, if there's going to be neighborhoods impacted by this. Here it is, mid-April. We're likely going to get a team and an announcement this afternoon, but yet we have no idea where any of this is going to happen within the city.
All I can say is if you look historically throughout the country, they try to keep it in the ballpark. They try to keep it and reutilize the area, the downtown areas, because they rebuild. They try to keep it close because a lot of times that's where the parking is. They can build it in a parking lot, level the old one. So if I'm making an educated guess, it's going to be right around the Delta Center, probably somewhere within those few city blocks. How much they eat up, if they tear out a road, all of that will be determined. But again, educated guess, looking at what has happened across the country, is probably going to be in that same Delta Center area.
Well, I'm telling you what, if the backhoes start showing up around Broadcast House, which is right across the street from the Delta Center, I'm going to tell them, you drop that backhoe on Dave Noriega's chair first and start digging there. Think about it.
It's right there. It very well could involve that.
Tracks lines run there as well, and that is that area could use a boost in the arm for restaurants too.
There's open space. That's a huge. They have an entire city block that is dedicated right now to parking. If you have a giant blank space of a city block and then some industrial area about another half block or so east of that, this is a prime spot. I would be shocked if it ends up anywhere else.
So, wasn't it ironic to you that we're gaining an NHL team? Probably learn more about that this afternoon. While risking the loss of the iconic, one of the biggest, most recognized film festivals in the world, Sundance. That's next.
Utah knows what it means to be earthquake ready.
Epicenter Magna, Utah was 5.7.
Today, Dave and Dejanovic mark the 2024 Great Utah Shakeout. Listen this hour as Be Ready Utah joins Dave and Debbie for the preparation and planning your family needs for the next emergency on KSL News Radio.
It's hard to believe it's been 4 years since that 5.7 hit Magna. In a few minutes, we're going to speak with the Granite School District and ask how the rebuild of Westlake Junior High has been going. That junior high took just a brunt of the earthquake, was ruled unsafe to occupy. The wall had collapsed. So we'll check in with them to see how things are going. Out there on the west side of town, Dave and I broadcasting from Evergreen Junior High right now, where they're just changing classes, and the kids were excited about the great shakeout.
Yeah, and we have done a great job over the years of retrofitting some of our older buildings, trying to make them earthquake safe. Some are too old, it's too cost prohibitive that we can't, but it's an important message, and I think it was a good reminder just a few years ago.
The irony was not lost on me when I heard the announcement yesterday that the Sundance Film Festival is putting out a bid proposal to see if other cities across the United States might want to host the festival going forward. The festival has been mainly in Park City. Of course, it's had to branch out across other parts of Utah as it has grown since 1985. And I've been to so many of the films, and many iconic films actually launched at the Sundance Film Festival, that I really feel like the Sundance Film Festival put Park City on the map as a chosen destination for a lot of people to vacation and ski. Ski bums might argue with me and say, no, it's the skiing that put us on the map, Deb. I think a lot of that had to do with the draw of the Sundance Film Festival. I'm worried that they're going to find a location that's more accommodating, because at the same time, I think they've kind of outgrown the digs up there in Park City. It's become so huge.
Entirely possible. It also would be such a major change from what the essence of the Sundance Film Festival is, because it's independent films, smaller films. This isn't the blockbusters that are coming through Hollywood. That really speaks to it. So a smaller town, Cairns, does the same thing. Carol Makita joins us right now. Carol, thank you. I will say my heart dropped a little bit with the thought I thought this would be absolutely untouchable.
Actually, Dave, there have been rumors about this idea for a few years now. As you mentioned, the festival, particularly post-pandemic, as all arts organizations struggled with the bottom line, this is true for the Sundance Film Festival. And the board of directors has to be looking at growing, so increasing the size of the festival, perhaps to help it succeed. And, you know, you also have to think about some of these bid cities may be talking about changing the time of year the festival is held. Yes, the combination of skiing and films is incredibly attractive to so many people, and it has become a huge economic success for the state of Utah. And I am sure that Park City and the state will fight to keep it here. But those are things under consideration, I'm sure.
KSL 5 Television's Carol Makita has been covering the arts for KSL 5 TV for as long as I can remember, Carol, and you were the first person I messaged when I heard the news. I couldn't think of a better person to talk about the Sundance Film Festival because you have covered it so eloquently and so in-depth for so long for KSL. What are your personal thoughts about this idea? To me at first I thought, well, this is a slap in the face to us. We have welcomed this. We have grown with it. But I do know that it can get, I think it has outgrown a lot of the venue space.
Well, I think that is part of the point. I've thought back in the last 24 hours over the years. I literally had a front row seat to the beginning before it was the Sundance Film Festival. And when the whole idea of an independent film festival happened with Mr. Redford, and this is his vision and the hard work that went into helping independent filmmakers have a showcase. I mean, what has happened in our state is nothing short, I think, of miraculous in the film industry. These are filmmakers whose creations would never have been shown had it not been for the opening of the door here in Utah at the Sundance Film Festival. These are films from around the world now. And certainly the the film industry took notice and jumped in. And so it has grown. And yes, I mean, there's a positive for the economy, but there is also a problem every year for the locals and their ability to simply move around their city. And you've mentioned we've had screenings in at the Sundance Resort in Salt Lake, even in Provo. It does probably need to expand. And what that would look like here, I'm not sure. But I have some really fond memories of watching it grow. And the idea that people have asked Mr. Redford over the years, do you think it should move someplace else? Park City's kind of small. And he would just smile and say, I love it here. This was his vision, and it came to fruition remarkably well. And so now there are many probably voices entering into this. Let's see what happens, you know?
Carol Makita, thank you so much for your insight. Your expertise has covered the arts for years and years for KSL Television. Thank you so much, Carol.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh.
Sundance Film Festival.
Cult classic.
Yeah, I was just looking at the list.
The Blair Witch Project.
Oh, that one.
I think that cured you, didn't it?
I was that never cured the you? Same after that one. I was never the same. As Carol said, let's watch what happens. But with so many, this opening up to the opportunity, opening up opportunities for so many other cities to get this festival in their town, I am a little bit worried that we may end up on the short end of this one, Dave.
It does feel like a complete betrayal of what Sundance is supposed to do. I mean, it is small, yeah. Indie films, get a shot. Yeah. It has grown, but to move it to a large city, which is probably what would happen, in my opinion, it just feels like a betrayal of the very essence of Sundance.
Next, we're going to continue our great coverage of the Great Shakeout, the actual drill. It happens at 10:15, but you can do it anytime you want. We're going to speak next live with the principal of Evergreen Junior High, where we're broadcasting live from today until noon. We're going to ask, what are some of the things that the principal wants your kids to know, even if they don't attend Evergreen Junior High, about earthquake safety? That's next.
It's the Great Utah Shakeout. Dave and Debbie are live from Evergreen Junior High in the Granite School District on KSL News Radio.
In a moment, we're going to speak live to the principal of Evergreen Junior High about what he wants kids to know about when it comes to earthquake readiness and earthquake safety. I'm thinking back to March of 2020, Dave, when I was in the newsroom. You were broadcasting from home because we were also in the throes of the pandemic. But I was thinking about what the school kids would have been thinking during that 5.7 that was the epicenter was in Magna. And it wasn't only the 5.7, but I'm looking at the data we have collected since then. There were some odds, like 700 earthquakes in the following, of course, they're going to call them aftershocks, probably technically, following the 2 weeks after that 5.7, 700. So this is something that, you know, kids need to know what to do just in case.
Yeah, they're aftershock earthquakes.
Yeah.
And as we were listening to the bells, as we're in the halls of Evergreen Junior High School, the bells are going off, and then all of the kids flood into the hallways. And then I started thinking, you've got hundreds of kids in the hallways. If an earthquake were to happen, like, what do you do? And this is probably, you know, just one of the many things on the principal's checklist of, oh, there's another contingency we've got to prepare for. So Ryan Shaw joins us right now, the principal of Evergreen Junior High School. You guys already did your test, right?
Yeah, we just finished it about a half hour ago.
How'd they do?
They did very well. Did excellent.
What were the curveballs that you see in school when it comes to preparing for an earthquake?
Well, by the time they're in junior high, they're very familiar with really kind of what to do, right? So it's just the practice, the repetition, getting that information to them early, right? What we do in an earthquake, drop, cover, and hold on, getting them to relax, and most importantly, to listen to their teachers and to the adults that are in the building, right? Because they know best, and they'll help them through pretty much any situation. So really, we do a lot of drills, and we try to be as ready as we can. Sorry, I've had a cold. My voice is a little bit rough, but we do a lot of drills, and hopefully we're ready for it. We did really well.
Good. Well, you work in a petri dish amongst kids, so it's no wonder a lot of people have that same cold, Principal Shaw. We're live this morning at Evergreen Junior High. We're broadcasting all morning long for the Great Shakeout.
Yes.
A lot of people will be taking cover at 10:15 this morning, but you've already done it here. And what are, you know, or ease some parents' minds here, Principal Shaw. What happens if we actually had an earthquake and, you know, kids were instructed to stay in the building? Is there some sort of an alert system that goes out to parents, provided, you know, all of our communications are still up and running? Should they expect a notification?
Yes. So that's a great question. So first off, Granite School District purchased a new system, a reporting system that we use each school has. It's called Catapult, right? And we use that for all of our drills. It's an awesome app that we use. It provides a real-time notification to administration where teachers and administrators can communicate, right? And they can let us know not only for lockdown drills, for evacuation, for earthquake drills, those types of things that we use district-wide, right? But above that, we also communicate through our district level would communicate, and that's through Ben Horsley's office. And we do provide as much information to them as quickly as possible to set their minds at ease.
We're surrounded by a number of your students who've kind of gathered around, and I think, you know, for years we've talked about stop, drop, and roll. You know, if you ever catch on fire, stop, drop, and roll. Now it's drop, cover, and hold on. What do you do with once that happens, what's the emergency plan after that? After the earthquake happens, what's the next steps?
Okay, after it does happen, right? We wait and make sure it's all clear, make sure that it's safe, and then we evacuate the building like we did in our drill, right? So calmly, as quietly as we can, and as slowly as we can, get out of the building as safely as possible. We have locations that we assign teachers to. They take their kids out, and then through the system we have, they can report whether they've picked kids up, if they're missing kids, and then they report like we're all clear, we're all good. And then you know, administration, as well as our wonderful custodial staff, you know, we would check the building out. The district could come out possibly, making sure that we're all safe to go back in the building.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for participating. We're so excited to be here today. Principal Ryan Shaw here at Evergreen Junior High School.
Lots straight ahead in the 10 o'clock hour, including a live interview with Be Ready Utah. We're going to talk about three things you need to do, what the best advice is for being prepared for an earthquake. So we're going to boil it down to three, hopefully simple things that we need to do. Of course, the great shakeout happens in about 15 minutes from now, although Evergreen Junior has already participated in the drill and the kids all got an A+. That's great. And then at 10:35, a live discussion with Ben Horsley of the Granite School District about the impact on to Westlake Junior High that the Magna earthquake had back in March of 2020. They had to shut that building down and keep it closed while it underwent reconstruction. We're going to get a status report on that.
Utah knows what it means to be earthquake ready.
Epicenter Magna, Utah, was 5.7.
Today, Dave and Dejanovic mark the 2024 Great Utah Shakeout. Listen this hour as Be Ready Utah joins Dave and Debbie for the preparation and planning your family needs for the next emergency on KSL News Radio.
We're going to talk to Be Ready Utah in just a moment about the top three things to prepare for earthquakes. But after the Magna earthquake in 2020, first of all, I counted my blessings that nobody got seriously injured. We didn't lose any lives. We knew we lost some buildings or things had to be retrofitted because of the earthquake. But I went home, checked my house, and then I called up my insurance agent. And to be ready for the next one, I got earthquake insurance for the first time in my home ownership life. And I
did the same thing.
I know.
but one thing to remember, though, is there is a grace period. So when we signed up for earthquake insurance, it doesn't go into effect, I think, for 30 days or so. So if it's something that you're interested in, just be aware there's usually a 30-day grace period
A waiting period before it actually kicks in.
Yeah.
Jeff Johnson with Be Ready Utah live on the line. We're at Evergreen Junior High. We're about 8 minutes away from Dave drop covering and holding on. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. Happy Shakeout Day.
It's great to talk to you. Are you guys up at the Capitol right now?
Yeah, we're in the State Emergency Operations Center going over. To be prepared.
Yeah, with the Division of Emergency Management leading out on this, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes to chat with us. But I think it's really important on a day like today to remind all of us, you know, give us your go-to list, your top three things that you want us to know, Jeff, to be prepared for an earthquake.
Well, there's a couple of top three lists. I'm going to go over one with you in this segment that might save lives, and that's the first one, is to seek a safe spot. Make sure you know where to go during an earthquake, and that means if you're home in the kitchen or home in the family room, if you're at home somewhere else in your house, what are you going to do if that starts shaking? When I went through a 7.7 earthquake in Japan, I was sitting on a couch and had no idea what to do. And so find a safe spot. If you're at work, you're at the grocery store, because really, if you don't survive the earthquake, all your other preparedness plans really don't matter a lot. So it's really important that you survive. And with that, I would say, you know what we're going to do here in about 7 or 8 minutes, drop, cover, and hold on, and practice that. So when your brain clicks off, when everything starts falling around you and furniture is moving, you have practiced and trained and are ready to implement a life-saving protective action, and that's to drop, cover, and hold on. And that hold on part is really important. Simply, I got underneath a table in my earthquake in Japan, and the table immediately left me. And that's why you need to hold on, because I was crawling across the broken glass and everything on the floor, trying to catch up to the table that was moving across the room. So
Jeff,
you drop,
that is incredible, first of all. Number one, you kind of slipped that in a little bit, that you've been in a 7.7 earthquake. That is, if I'm doing the math right, that's 1,000 times bigger than what we experienced here in Utah.
That is correct. It was life-changing.
Did you catch up to the table, or did the table slide? I need to hear the end of the story.
I caught up to the table and grabbed the front two legs with my hands and hooked my ankles around the back legs, and that's where I rode the earthquake out, sliding around on the floor underneath the table, and watched the earthquake happen.
Is that similar to the big one that we expect to happen here?
We could have a 7 to 7.5, so not quite as large, but really similar. And, yeah, it is what we could expect here, at least along the Wasatch Front. Other places in the state don't have that great of an expectation. But here, yeah, we do.
Jeff Johnson with Be Ready Utah live on the line with us. He's at the Emergency Operations Center up at the state capitol, where everybody there, also us here at Evergreen Junior High, and kids all across the Wasatch Front, and also, you know, people who are, you know, sitting at work right now getting ready to practice their earthquake drill. It's the Great Shakeout. Jeff, when you talk about an earthquake of that size, what I'm thinking is, if you're drop, covering, and holding on, and you're holding on tight, like, it sounds like you got that table in a headlock and you were doing some sort of wrestler move once you caught up to the thing to not let go. Is the main thing, the main objective, to cover your head? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah. If you can't, cover your whole body if you can.
Okay.
I mean, get under something large enough to protect your whole body. If you can't, yes, then cover your head. I've seen some demonstrations where, even if you're sitting in an auditorium and you just flip the chair over and put your head underneath it, and because your head is the most important part to protect. But again, I'd go back and try to identify safe spots in your work, at the grocery store, anywhere you can think of, and make sure you have those in your head, so you're not trying to determine that at that moment when your life's being threatened.
How long should we prepare? Like, how long does an earthquake typically last?
The severe shaking is going to last anywhere from 15 to 30 seconds. And then there could be some ground shaking that runs out for a minute or two. At mine, it ran 2 minutes and 20 seconds, entire time that you could feel the ground shaking. But the real severe shaking, those P waves that hit that cause the building just to start coming apart and everything to move around, are going to last 15 to 30 seconds, usually in a very large quake.
Jeff, you were saying when you were in that 7.7 in Japan, you said something about crawling over a glass to catch up with the table that was scooting away from you during that quake. Something I really hadn't thought about is broken glass. So should we be looking for places that are away from windows?
Yes, you should. Glass is dangerous. Don't go near any doors that have glass to go to the outside. The building is usually twisted, depending on the direction the waves are coming from. The building is usually twisted, and that twisting almost shatters all the glass. And so as you and Dave look around your office right now, you need to say, these windows, these glass walls, these doors are probably going to break, and where do I need to be away from that falling glass, and then not maneuvering across that glass on the ground. So glass breaks in large earthquakes. We lost all of our windows in the building I was in.
The drop, cover, and hold on message is so simple to understand, but I'm also a pretty big guy. I'm 6 feet, 6 inches tall. I don't fit in every place. So you're saying prioritize your head, make sure that is covered, but in an ideal situation, you're protecting the entire body.
Yeah, here in a few minutes, you're going to get a chance to practice that. And if it doesn't work, you need to come up with a plan B. My problem was at my work previously, I had too much stuff under my desk. And on the shakeout day, I found that out. It was really a helpful thing to learn that I was having a hard time getting underneath my desk because I had preparedness emergency stuff under my desk. And so this is why the shakeout is so important. It gives you a chance to practice this, to put this physical memory in your head, and also to make sure that you can get under someplace that you can fit. And yeah, Dave, you are a big guy, and so you might want to, after today, figure out how you're going to fit your entire body underneath that studio desk.
Jeff, he's not sharing space with me if this thing happens. He better clear out all the garbage that's piled high under his newsroom desk. Jeff Johnson with Be Ready Utah. What great advice. Just first person actually in that 7.7 quake in Japan. Thank you so much explaining to us what to look out for. And it's time, Dave. We're 15 seconds away from the great shakeout. And I'm going to let you get under this plastic desk.
Am I the first one?
Dave and I are going to drop. We invite you to join us if you're in a place to do so. Drop, cover, and hold
on. Feel the shaking coming.
Feel the shaking. What are you?
There we go. I'm under.
Hey, no, that's my pole. Don't hold on to that.
You're not holding on to anything.
This is okay. Good thing you have me with you. All right. We're back in a few minutes after the great shakeout drill wraps up.
It's the Great Utah Shakeout. Dave and Debbie are live from Evergreen Junior High in the Granite School District on KSL News Radio.
Well, Dave got a D on the Great Shakeout Drill. He dropped, he covered, but he forgot to hold on. So that's a 66%.
Wow.
Fail.
A harsh curve.
We're going to make you do it a few more times during the show here, Dave, and see if you can get it right. You're getting everything else right in this show, but you got to get the earthquake drill right. The Great Utah Shakeout happening about 6 minutes ago was just a drill. It was only a drill, but it also gives us a lot of information, just what we need to, of things we need to work on, Dave.
The thing I've always chuckled about is when we had our earthquake and we didn't know how big it was. We're experiencing it. We have no reference point. Wade Matthews joins us right now from the Department of Emergency Management. That's part of it, Wade, is we have no idea when the ground starts shaking if this is going to be a monster or if it's just going to be a little rattler.
I think Wade is very tied up on their drill still up at the Emergency Operations Center, Dave, up at the Capitol. Mm. So we're still trying to get him back on the line. So I heard, you know, you just talked to him moments ago. Here, there you are, Wade. Hi.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah. So Dave was asking, we can hear you. Dave was just asking a question. He'll re-ask it.
So one of the things that I realized when we were going through our, I guess, little quake is we have no idea what is going on. When the ground starts shaking, we don't know if this is the big one. We don't know if it's a small one because there's really no reference there. And I think, does that kind of speak to you take it all very seriously as if it is the big one?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a really good point, Dave, too. It's like when the ground starts shaking, we don't know how bad it's going to be. And it could be a moderate one like the Magna quake or something much larger. We know the Wasatch Fault could produce an earthquake up to a magnitude 7.5, which would be 100 times greater than the Magna quake. So, yeah, you just treat it all the same. And the shaking may last different lengths of time as well. It could be a short one. You know, a minute-long earthquake is what we kind of practice in shakeout. That's a really long quake, 20, 30 seconds. But, yeah, the protective action is the same regardless.
One of the things we were just talking with Jeff Johnson about moments ago when he called the show and gave us tips to be ready, Wade, is that as you're practicing this drill, he said when he practiced the drill, he recognized that the area under his desk was just packed with too many things. I think we tend to use our desks or the under part of our desk as storage. I know I had like cases of water under my desk for a while because I thought, well, we need water in an earthquake maybe. So I'll store cases of water under my desk for everybody. And then I now realize I'll probably have to use my desk as a place to take cover and hold on because it's just basically, you know, like a perfect place to fit under. So these are the things that the Great Shakeout really teaches us. And these are our takeaways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a good time to do an assessment, an office hazard hunt or a home hazard hunt, and make sure that you've got some places identified around your office or home that you could do drop, cover, and hold on. again, it doesn't necessarily mean a desk, table, a chair, but yeah, have some place like that or up against a wall without glass or other objects overhead. You know, again, this is we plan for the worst, hope for the best. We do the best we can with what we have. And, you know, there may be times when we did drop cover and hold on and we did get underneath our desk or table or chair and we get trapped. We might be stuck there for a while until rescuers come in and start doing searching. And maybe it might be helpful to have some water under the desk there, as you mentioned, Debbie. So, again, we plan for the worst, hope for the best. There's no guarantees, but we do know that these are going to give us the best chance of coming out okay.
Drop, cover, and hold on is so great in the moment. What happens after it's all done? What's the best recommendation? Are we trying to evacuate the building? When do we know when it's safe to come back in?
Yeah, good question there. Absolutely evacuate the building because we know we don't run into or out of a building during the shaking, but after the shaking has stopped, you've done your drop, cover, and hold on. Go outside, do a quick visual inspection. Even yourselves, you know, hopefully eventually we'll have trained professional inspectors that will come around to big buildings and offices and so on and inspect these after an earthquake. But just do a quick visual inspection. Is the building tilted a little bit? Is it twisted off of its foundation? Are there cracks or broken windows and things like that? And if you question the safety of it, don't go back inside because we know what follows an earthquake are more earthquakes called aftershocks. But those are just additional earthquakes that could cause additional damage to damage a building. So, yeah, check those out before you're going back inside.
Wade Matthews with the Division of Emergency Management has been corralling hundreds of thousands of participants across the state for the Great Utah Shakeout. I just checked your website. It said 930,000 people had committed to signing up for this drill. Congratulations, first of all. That's 50,000 more than it looks like you had last year, if I'm just reading that map right, Wade. What's the one takeaway that you want people to really focus on after this drill, after this year's drill?
You know, this is a great time to just evaluate your total overall disaster plans, individual plans, family plans, office plans. You know, look at your food storage. How much water do you have stored? How much food storage do you have stored? What would you do in a long-term power outage? You know, we anticipate after a major earthquake on the Wasatch Fault, there will be many areas without power and water for not just days or weeks, but possibly months. So it's going to have a major impact. So it's a good time to really just review your total overall emergency plans and start having that emergency mind, that preparedness mindset. Yeah. Just think about preparedness all the time.
Thanks, Wade. Wade Matthews with the Division of Emergency Management. We hope everything went well with the drill up at the Capitol and all across Utah. There's a lot of things that I have taken action step toward, Dave, since we started a couple of years ago going all in with the Division of Emergency Management and being more prepared. And I was thinking, you know, I really skated for a lot of years. Like I was identifying the neighbors' homes that I was going to go to for food and water, you know. But now I'm that neighbor that I know that people can come to my home if they need to because I have water storage, something I hadn't had for many years. I had a couple of cases of water from Costco, but now I actually have the water jugs, and I made sure there was something that I could pick up. They're about 3-4 gallons each. There's something that I can move if I need to. When my dog was still alive, I had two separate containers set aside for Riley because I was like, oh, he's going to need water too. I have plenty of food to last me for a month. And now I know what to do in terms of, you know, where I'm going to hide in my home if I drop cover and hold on. And everything that I own that's, you know, needs to be attached to the wall is attached to the wall. And this is all, it hasn't taken me much. It's hardly cost me any money and it's given me peace of mind. And this is all because of the Division of Emergency Management and our partnership with them.
It's funny that you said, you got water containers that you can move.
Uh-huh.
My mom has 2 50-gallon water containers that basically need a dolly to move.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, oh, my, there's some water there, but if it becomes inaccessible, it's certainly not movable. So that's another good tip.
I got mine. I'm not pitching Walmart, but I am there about four times a week just because it's so close and convenient. And the people who they work there are so awesome. They really, really are. But I got the containers there. They were $6, $7, $8 each. And there's plenty of steps on the Be Ready Utah website and tips and things that action steps that you can take. It's so easy, and I made such a big deal about not doing it for so long that doing it, I was like, I should have done this years ago.
You can learn more at shakeout.org/Utah. Great resource with tips.
Next, Westlake Junior High was pretty much destroyed in the earthquake March of 2020. And they've been rebuilding it. So we're going to get with the Granite School District to see how things are going and what they're doing differently to retrofit and make sure that building is earthquake safe. Next.
Utah knows what it means to be earthquake ready.
Epicenter Magna, Utah was 5.7.
Today, Dave and Dejanovic mark the 2024 Great Utah Shakeout. Listen this hour as Be Ready Utah joins Dave and Debbie for the preparation and planning your family needs for the next emergency on KSL News Radio.
Just thinking about the Magna earthquake in March of 2020, and so grateful that it happened earlier in the morning because a lot of kids weren't at school yet. Were your kids at school, Dave, at the time?
No. They sleep in. They're always late.
Well,
if they're not five minutes late for school, they're not going to school.
Let me rewind that a little bit, too. We were also in the middle of a global pandemic, and things had started to shut down pretty quickly. So a lot of kids were home and distance learning at the time. But one school that certainly took the brunt and got a lot of damage was Westlake Junior High. Of course, we are broadcasting live today from Evergreen Junior High, which is totally on the opposite end of the valley. We're more in the Mill Creek area. Westlake is at like 34th South and 34th West. And Ben Horsley with the Granite School District, thanks for coming out to Evergreen for us to give us an update on Westlake.
Well, I'm just glad that Evergreen didn't fall down on you in the midst of that earthquake drill this morning.
Everything went well.
So I'm glad she held up. She's a beautiful building.
She is. And she's not, she's kind of a little bit older.
Yeah. She's slated for a rebuild here in the next decade, depending on how funding goes. So
there you go.
Same reason and rationale, right? We got to bring these facilities up to code and up to snuff so that they can be a resource if there was a seismic event.
I think that was a great reminder for us. We have a lot of historic buildings, older buildings, and it costs a lot of money to replace them. And we'll see this in school bonds, and it's $100 million here, $100 million there. These are expensive school bonds. And I think as a taxpayer, we can be reticent to say yes to these things. I think that was a great reminder that this is not a luxury. This is something that is a necessity.
Yeah, especially in some of these more mature communities like Granite District serves. I think it's interesting. We work with a lot of community resource teams and for emergency kits to be placed in schools for the community in case there was a seismic event, an earthquake. A lot of our families' homes, especially in these mature areas, are not going to be able to withstand a major seismic event. And it's interesting that we're putting these kits in schools that also will not withstand a seismic event. We need to look at these as more of less of schools and more of community centers, emergency shelters, things of that nature.
That's a great point, Ben. This could become a community shelter if the big one were to hit. Talk about Westlake. How is, first of all, remind us what the damage was. I think a lot of us were taken by surprise about, you know, how damaged that building was.
Absolutely. If you walked through it after only a few of us were able to, there were cracks along several significant beams and major portions of that facility, and it was rendered and needing to be rebuilt or have major remodeling done. And ultimately, it was cheaper to rebuild some of these older facilities in order to bring them up to code and current seismic standards. I don't think people realize sometimes that whenever you touch a building like Evergreen that we're in, an older facility, and you go in to do any sort of construction, you are required to bring it up to the latest and greatest in seismic. And so that's what makes it very expensive in some of these instances. And so fortunately, insurance covered the bulk of that, and we were able to get some FEMA funding to cover the remaining cost of that rebuild. And that school will reopen this summer. We're very excited about it.
if I remember correctly, was everyone out? Nobody was in?
That's correct. It was before school started, and it was during the pandemic. And so we were actually out on emergency leave, everybody at home. That was literally days after we were school was suspended for the pandemic.
So what has what will this new building hold in terms of earthquake, you know, being able to be earthquake resistant? There's no building that could be earthquake proof, but earthquake resistant.
Yeah, degree possible. There's just certain standards that it must be. We don't use a lot of masonry anymore. Those are called reinforced masonry buildings. We have to go back and address a number of our facilities across the district and across the state, really. The state came out with a report that showed the significant amount of school buildings that are still using a lot of masonry in their construction and don't have the steel support structure to withstand a major seismic event. And that's the advantage that Westlake will have with this new build is that steel structure to withstand that type of event.
I do kind of chuckle when we talk to students and when we go through some of these earthquake drills, and there's a lot of different drills they do. There's a varying level of intensity and seriousness that they take. But I think ultimately, you know, even going through the motions, even if they're not fully engaged, I think when something like this happens, whether it's an earthquake thing, drill or fire drill, they revert to some training. So I kind of chuckled when I asked the kids they were surrounding, like, who actually got under their desk? And they kind of like half-heartedly lifted their hands up. But I think it still speaks to the importance of the training, even if it doesn't seem like everyone's totally invested.
Absolutely. And I think it's just putting that mental reminder. It's like building muscle memory when you're an athlete, right? We're going to build a little bit of muscle memory in our students' minds. If an unfortunate event occurred, what different types of drills that we do throughout the year, not just for earthquakes and whatnot.
We learned in the last hour from the principal here at Evergreen Junior High that the Granite District has an alert system to get information out to parents if there were to be an earthquake. Hit on that again for people who might not have been able to tune
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I think our schools, we've really tried to take that off our school's responsibility and as a district work on the notification piece and get that out. We actually have an emergency page, and we're able to, within a few minutes, be able to send a mass alert and text. Anybody within our schools who has the application on their desktop can send an alert, put a school into a lockdown or any other sort of emergency protocol, or if there was an earthquake or other some sort of emergency, notify police, fire, and all those resources instantaneously. And then that allows us to, in turn, make quicker notification to our families.
Ben, thank you for joining us. Ben Horsley from the Granite School District. Learning that the school that was most impacted during the Utah earthquake, the Magna earthquake, is being rebuilt. And looks like things are going well there.
We'll keep an eye on that development. Thanks, Ben, as he runs out the door. Straight ahead, let's go live with the University of Utah Seismograph Station and ask this question. How many earthquakes does Utah experience every day? Many of them we probably never even feel, right?
It's the Great Utah Shakeout. Dave and Debbie are live from Evergreen Junior High in the Granite School District on KSL News Radio.
In a moment, we're going to go live to the University of Utah's seismograph station and talk about earthquakes. I think we feel like we maybe have a little tremor here or there almost daily. But surprisingly, I am looking at the latest map. They actually have a website for this date. It says recent earthquakes. And the last 2 weeks have been pretty quiet, but we're going to get confirmation for sure in just a moment.
I think we're surprised to learn that because we just don't feel it. Doesn't mean they're not happening. They're happening largely all across the state. The only one that we really care about is the big one. You know, I mean, there's little ones that could be, you know, that can come in, but even the one that hit Magna, it was a 5.4. 5.7, somewhere around there. And it didn't do a lot of damage, though, because it was an older building, it did destroy one school.
Yeah. Catherine Whitten, University of Utah seismograph You work for the seismograph stations up there, Catherine. Hello.
Hi. I'm a seismologist. Hi,
a
nice
seismologist.
To be here.
I didn't have your proper title here, so I apologize. Well,
that's okay.
You sound like you know everything there is to know about earthquakes. So, how's it?
Well, I know a bit.
Well, I know after that Magna 5.7 hit back in March of 2020, I just went back and did a little research on it. It looked like we had hundreds of smaller earthquakes following that for the next couple of weeks, right?
We did have quite a few aftershocks, much longer than for a couple of weeks for years, actually. We continued to have aftershocks from that Magna earthquake. Yeah, we had a lot. Most of them were not felt. You know, we record in Utah about 1,200 earthquakes a year, but most of them are very small and not felt by people.
At what point does an earthquake catch your attention? I'm sure you can't pay attention or get worried about all 1,200. At what point
Correct.
Do you start paying attention?
Usually when people start to feel it. So that's around magnitude 2.5 or more likely a 3. And we have about one of those a month in Utah, magnitude 3 or larger. So that a magnitude 3 might feel like a lot of people think a truck drove by or like something hit the side of the house or the kids were being rowdy or something. And then later they realize, oh, that was actually an earthquake.
I have a story from the 90s. I had actually had gotten in the shower and I was shampooing my hair and I thought, oh, my goodness, I feel so dizzy. I don't know if I'll be able to go to work today. Well, it turns out it was an earthquake.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was in another part of Salt Lake County. I want to say Bluffdale. I don't know if my memory serves. That was a long time ago. It was probably 93-ish. And I was in Cottonwood Heights, Midvale area, living there at the time, and I felt it. And it wasn't a super strong earthquake, although I do remember a little bit of, I believe, damage to a driveway. But I sure felt it, and I didn't actually know what it was until I got in the car. I turned on KSL News Radio. I was driving to work. I worked at Channel 4 News and figured out what I was going to be doing all day. I was going to be covering a minor earthquake. But we felt it, Catherine. So I do
That's
think
great.
It was like that.
I love
that,
those stories.
Yeah, I just thought I was dizzy. I was having a dizzy spell. Probably should have eaten breakfast or something like that. No, it was an earthquake. So are there areas along the Wasatch Front that you see more activity up there at the University of Utah seismograph stations when you're watching the charts?
Well, the whole Wasatch Front is very active. You know, we have the Wasatch Fault, which runs from southern Idaho all the way to central Utah, and that whole area is very active, and it's where all the people live. So we have a lot of earthquakes where the people are here in Utah.
So when you talk about the fault, because we've heard about the Wasatch Fault for years and mm-hmm. years, is it how deep is it under the ground? Does it pop up? Is it something we can see?
So it starts next to the mountains at the surface, and then it dips to the west underneath the city or underneath the valley. Mm. And there are a few places you can see it, but really the best indication that we have a fault here is the tall mountains next to the low valley.
Worst case scenario in terms of magnitude of the earthquake, you guys keep your eyes on the closest.
Right. Our worst case scenario, the big one, is about a magnitude 7, possibly up to a 7.5, but somewhere in that range. So that's a big earthquake. Fortunately, it's not a 9. We're not worried about something much bigger than that. But a magnitude 7 would be very destructive here in Salt Lake City, in the valley, in northern Utah, because it's, as I just said, it's right underneath population centers. So we'd be very close to it.
How would we experience it? Is it severe shaking? Is it more of a rolling motion? Do we have any idea what it would feel like?
It would definitely be severe shaking. I think when people describe that rolling motion, that's when they're farther away. So the farther away you are from the earthquake, you might experience more of the rolling. But let's say if you're in Salt Lake City and we have an earthquake on the Salt Lake City segment of the fault, you're going to experience very severe shaking. You might not be able to walk. The best thing you can do is get under a table or a desk, get under something sturdy and hold on. And the hold on is because the shaking can be so severe that you might get bounced out from underneath the thing that's protecting you. So that's why we say drop, cover, and hold on.
Catherine Whitten is a seismologist with the University of Utah. They've got seismograph stations where they keep an eye on this kind of stuff all the time. I've heard in the past that it's impossible to predict earthquakes. Catherine,
correct.
Tell us about that. Okay.
So we know about how often earthquakes happen on a given fault. So, for example, on the Salt Lake City segment of the Wasatch Fault, we know that the earthquakes happen approximately every 1,300 years. The last one was 1,400 years ago. But there's a lot of variability in that number. So it could be every 800 years, it could be every 2,000 years. So we can't say exactly when the next one is coming, but we have a very general idea of how often they happen.
So we're a little bit overdue.
Really the best we can do.
A little overdue.
I like to say we're about due.
We're about due.
We're about due. Yeah.
Or in 600 years. I appreciate it.
Awesome, Catherine. Thank you so much. Catherine Whitten, seismologist with the University of Utah, seismograph stations, calling in live on this day of the great shakeout. The actual drill happened at 10:15 this morning. 930,000 Utahns had signed up for it. But you could do it any time, and you probably should try it more than once a year.
Which is something that they did here at Evergreen Junior High School. We're broadcasting live, and right around 9 o'clock, shortly after class had started, they were piping through the loudspeakers earthquake sounding effects, and for the next 30 seconds or 45 seconds, you heard that going on, and the kids were learning to drop, cover, and hold on.
We've been talking all week long. I think we've been talking about this for 2 weeks about NHL coming to Utah. Ryan Smith, the owner of the Jazz, buying for over $1 billion the Arizona Coyotes. The Coyotes finished third. Last game, last night of the season. The deal is supposed to be approved this afternoon in 2 hours from now by the NHL Board of Governors. Alex Curry, of the Sports Zone here at 97.5 FM, JJ and Alex. The last time I talked to him about this was in the hall at Broadcast House. We were in the second floor. I think they were getting ready to go in and tape or broadcast our show for the day. And he stopped me. He's like, Deb, I'm sick and tired of seeing like graphics and renditions. I want some real meat. All we've seen is this stuff and like, you know, with colorful buildings and stuff on graphics. So he's going to join the show in about 5 minutes and tell us what he knows about this deal. It'll probably get done today, so we might have an announcement this afternoon about an NHL team moving to Utah.
Utah knows what it means to be earthquake ready.
Epicenter Magna, Utah was 5.7.
Today, Dave and Dejanovic mark the 2024 Great Utah Shakeout. Listen this hour as Be Ready Utah joins Dave and Debbie for the preparation and planning your family needs for the next emergency on KSL News Radio.
I want to know if we're going to know right at 1 o'clock today when the NHL Board of Governors meets. They're going to vote with Ryan Smith. Can buy the Arizona Coyotes. Of course, the owner of the Utah Jazz been vying for this opportunity to bring an NHL team to the Wasatch Front. But there's a lot of things that have to happen after the announcement, but that is the first order of business. None of the other things can happen until we get a team. What do you think is going to happen today, Dave?
Number one, they're going to get a green light across the nation. The National Hockey League is going to absolutely approve this. The Arizona Coyotes have been a troubled organization for a long time. They've gone through ownership changes. They've gone through moves of where they play. Right now they're playing in Mullet Arena, a 4,500-seat arena. To give you an idea, that's about a quarter of the size, maybe even a fifth of the size of the Maverick Center.
Yeah.
And they're not even filling that place up. So we can't be surprised that this troubled franchise is on the move, and we gobble them up.
Host of JJ and Alex, the one, the only, Alex Curry, live on the line. Alex, you agree with Dave? This thing is going to be rubber stamped this afternoon at 1?
I think that everybody's really excited, obviously. So it's like, it's kind of funny because it's like, well, it's either today or tomorrow, and I don't really care which one. Just make it happen. The last day of the NHL regular season is today. The NHL will likely be the team that kind of will be the ones who take you know, temporary ownership, and then Ryan Smith and his group will end up being the ones who buy it technically from the NHL. And I think that's how we're going to be able to see the name of the team change and everything as quickly as they're going to want to see happen. And here's what's really good about this move is this team isn't a bad team. Like, they've got a lot of really young guys. They've got a ton of cap space, $40+ million in cap space, which you guys know is a massive deal to be able to walk in and already have those assets on top of the ability to be able to make, you know, a team happen. So it's not just that they're going to come here. They're going to actually probably come here and be able to win within the first couple of seasons and probably make the playoffs and probably be a really, really fun team and a young team too.
That's a huge part of it, because there is every time there is an initial support, but if a team isn't good, it's hard to keep selling those tickets and keep that energy up when you're losing. Though we did experience that with the Jazz this season, where we still were selling some tickets, had some things sold out, and the team was terrible.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we don't see a lot of teams, Dave, lose a lot, especially Jazz teams. Like, historically, the thing is this is a new deal for us. We've known basketball forever. We've seen teams be good here forever, especially the Jazz, who, you know, out of their 40 seasons they've been here, they've gone to the playoffs like 36 of them or whatever it is. I don't know of a better situation for a team to come into, just because there is going to be that support, there is going to be that massive fan base. But I do think that right off the bat, we're just going to learn a lot, right? It's going to be hockey 101 for us, but there's also a massive group of folks who are going to be huge fans already. And so you can't expect this team to be somebody who's going to immediately, you know, it's not going to be a Vegas go to the Stanley Cup Finals and win it within your first three seasons kind of a deal. But I do think you're going to see a lot of butts in seats, and you see butts in seats at Jazz games that for a Jazz team, it's not that, you know, exciting right now. So I think you're going to see a massive amount of energy and a ton of fun. I have no idea what to expect in terms of long-term, but I was living in Dallas when the Stars moved from Minnesota. Dallas is not a hockey town, and they became a hockey town immediately, overnight. We were all wearing rollerblades and playing street hockey like the next day. So I'm telling you, that's exactly what's going to happen here.
Alex Carey of JJ and Alex, you can hear him at 97.5 from 3 to 7. You guys have a four-hour show. It's an hour longer than Dave. I don't know how you got so lucky. You know, Alex, last time I think we bumped into each other in person because you never come see us anymore. <It's>, everything's over the phone. But we were on the second floor. I saw you guys are walking into a studio to record or broadcast. And you said, Deb, the only thing I've seen is like artist renderings of these stadiums or stadium that's going to get built. And I want to see the real thing. So have you gotten any word on where this stadium might be built? Or do you have any inside track on that? Because we're sure in the dark.
They're hoping for Salt Lake. I mean, they really are. They're doing everything they can. I mean, look at what Ryan Smith is doing. Like, basically, the city council, a lot of it's going to be in Salt Lake City's hands, the city itself. The city council is doing a bunch of these votes. They're trying to figure out what Ryan Smith and what the group want to do to be able to, you know, quote unquote, revitalize downtown. Because as they've said, it's not just going to be an arena. It's going to be like a city center that's a little bit more amped up, a lot more amped up than what it is now. And that's going to depend a lot on some taxpayer help. It's going to depend on a lot of investment from the ownership as well. But they're really, really, really hoping for a Salt Lake City move. And, you know, the idea that I think there was, you know, for a long time we talked about this too. It was going to be Draper, right? It was going to be the old prison site. You know, we were talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that got squashed like pretty quickly. And I think that some of that has been to basically ask Ryan Smith, hey, can we figure this out for downtown? We got to revitalize our downtown. And we're not talking about just making an arena, a hockey arena. We're talking about making sure that the Jazz and a new hockey team and everybody else involved, shops, you know, I don't know how many malls we need to build downtown to revitalize it, but we've tried it a few times, but maybe this will be something even more. And I do think it's going to be, I mean, this is a booming population, but Salt Lake is not a place that the population is booming necessarily downtown, obviously. So I think that they're trying to get it to be a downtown situation. I think that's priority number one.
I would agree. Definitely priority number one. But at the same time, and we've seen this in other cities across the country, if the city starts fighting back or they start asking for too many concessions, then you can move 40 minutes here, 40 minutes there, still stay in Utah. But there's a lot of locations that would welcome and give every concession imaginable to bring an NHL team to their city.
Yeah, and you know, economic professors, Dave, don't love historically the idea of build a stadium and then things will just blow up. I do think that our city is a little bit different. I think Salt Lake City is a little different in the sense that there is a population base that is just willing to come into downtown. They do love it. And that's like the old school model. I don't like the idea of let's put it near Point of the Mountain and then that's kind of a big – you know, population boom in that area. We'll get people coming from north and south. I'm a downtown guy. I mean, we've worked there a long, long time, all of us. And we've seen the ups and downs of it. We've seen the times where we wouldn't bring our kids downtown. And we're not at that space right now. I don't think it's a desperate spot that we're in right now, but this will make it even better. It actually has gotten better. I think that downtown is so much better than it was 20 years ago when we first started working there, when I first started working down there. And I know the city council, they're asking questions, and they should. There's a checks and balances system for a reason. I hope that we don't just look sideways at the project just for the sake of saying, no, I'm gonna dig in and be the naysayer on this as a city council member. I hope they look at it and go, let's see what 20 years down the line looks like with Olympics, with an MLB team, all of it. They want all of it, and they want all the benefits of it, and I hope that we get it. I hope that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot before we get there.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Alex, because we absolutely could shoot ourselves in the foot, whether it's trying to make a name for yourself politically or for some other reason, or maybe it's just genuinely you don't want it. Alex, thanks for joining us, and keep us posted.
Yeah, we'll be listening this afternoon to see what you know that we don't know from 3 to 7 on 97.5. Also, make sure you're tuning in as well to Jeff Kaplan's Afternoon News, because our team of reporters and producers, along with Jeff, will be keeping a very close eye on the developments when the NHL Board of Governors takes that vote this afternoon at 1 o'clock our time. It's 3 o'clock Eastern time, so that vote happens at 1 o'clock our time, so we should know a lot more come Jeff Kaplan's Afternoon News, which starts at 3 o'clock.
It's the Great Utah Shakeout. Dave and Debbie are live from Evergreen Junior High in the Granite School District on KSL News Radio.
Our friend Amy Donaldson is going to join us in just a moment. She's been investigating for quite some time a situation at local high schools. There's been some questions over scholarships being offered illegally to international students, and she has been exposing that through a series of reports on KSL.com. She's going to join us, walk us through what she's learned through her investigation, and then talk about what the fallout is from her research.
Yeah, there's a few things. Here in Utah, we largely have open enrollment. You can get variances. You can attend a school kind of where you want. What you can't do is go out and actively recruit people to come to your school. And this happens primarily for athletics. You know, you see somebody that's 6 feet, 10 inches tall, and they're super athletic, and they're just dominating the junior high school basketball world. You can't reach out and entice them to come to your school and openly recruit them. That is not available.
Amy, you there?
I am. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I know you're on your way to join us here at Evergreen Junior High, but why don't we start here before you get here with the backstory and what you discovered that led up to some changes that we'll talk about in the next segment.
Yeah, I mean, I've known that international students come, especially to private schools and to boarding schools. I mean, as long as I've been covering sports, you know, 25 plus years. But I think a couple of years ago, some parents reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we're not sure this is above board. And what I found in doing some investigation for almost 2 years now is there are indications. We're not finished with our investigation, and I think the Activities Association is also doing a separate investigation, that there are some student athletes who are coming as international students who have been recruited to come here to play sports. Now, they can come here and go to school. That's no problem. You can recruit kids here for programs, anything but sports. And so, yeah, that's, I think it's a bigger problem than anybody anticipated. Since the articles have run, I've gotten even more calls. And now the Activities Association has proposed, well, the first of what I hear are going to be several rule changes. But this rule change is that anyone coming on an F-1 visa, which allows you to stay for more than 1 year, and most of those kids are at private schools, that they would not be eligible for varsity play at all.
Amy, but I want to go back to what your investigation uncovered before we get into what the Athletic, the Activities Association is doing. Because in reading that article that was published in March, there were a lot of things happening with these international students. For example, they were getting shifted around from host family to host family. They didn't have insurance coverage. And in some cases, you found that these kids were living alone and they were, you know, 16, 17 years old. Talk about that, what you uncovered.
Yeah, and I think everything you listed, all of those things I found, what I also found is that, like, there was nobody checking to make sure, A, that these kids were being cared for, fed, supervised, any of, even going to classes, right? But there was also nobody making sure that every kid that comes on these visas is in a safe place. Like, there were, I met only one family that had had a background check. I hosted foreign exchange students. We had to have home visits and a lengthy application process and a background check, and their parents got to meet us and vice versa. None of that was happening with these kids that I talked to.
How is the recruiting happening? Did you learn, like, practically what was happening?
I did. Some of that is going to be coming out in stories next week and the week after. But basically, the same way any recruiting happens. Like you described it, Dave, you go to a tournament. Sometimes these private schools or these academy-type schools, like Wasatch Academy-type schools, I'm not saying Wasatch Academy is one of them because I haven't looked into them, but a school like that, like that's not affiliated with the association, they're hosting tournaments, and the kids, these foreign teams come here and play, or a camp is hosted for foreign players, and then there's this promise to them that they could earn a scholarship at a school in Utah. Some of those kids, they say, are getting academic scholarships, but we have no way of knowing. There's no way to check any of this. There's no, you know, agency that's, like, you know, making sure that these kids aren't being exploited.
And then they are, what, flying over here from a foreign country to play a sport? Is it primarily basketball?
You know, I started looking into it at one school first. That was Juan Diego, and it was basketball that I was looking into. Since I started reporting on this in earnest about 6 months ago, it's turned into football, soccer, volleyball. It's pretty – I think I haven't run into
Amy, it sounds very wide. It sounds very widespread, yeah. And what you're saying is that this is way outside the bounds. This is not allowed to bring in these students from foreign countries to play athletics. And then in the cases that you found, in some cases, perhaps being offered either a tuition waiver for the private school or a scholarship. That's not cool, right? They're not allowed to do that.
Not allowed to do that. And here, I should say, that's what the Activities Association has to look into. I've looked into a couple, but it's really hard to prove that a kid did not pay tuition. And also, the tuition for foreign students is not listed on any of these websites. So if you call and ask, how much is it for me to send an international student to your school, they'll say, well, that depends. Who are you? What are you doing? It's really hard to just get. It's kind of like getting healthcare information. If you call and ask how much a surgery costs, nobody can tell you. But if you go in and have the surgery, then they'll tell you. It's sort of similar.
So were they doing this, in your view, to stack the team so they'd get a bunch of, like, tall players and good players from other countries? And then how was that disadvantaging the Utah students who were, you know, trying to get on the team at those high schools?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of question at this point about why this is happening, and I think that it's nuanced. So So for some coaches, it's going to be they want to win. So they're trying to just recruit the best players, and those might be local and those might be international. They just want to put together the best team they can. For others, there's this, like, earnest, like, let's give these kids an opportunity. Some kids have been recruited by college coaches, and college coaches have referred them to a person. That person has gotten them to an American school. This isn't even happening just in Utah. It's nationwide. And, I mean, Camila Cardozo, she came over in one of these programs, went to a small Christian school in Tennessee, private school, not a member of the association. And, you know, she's second pick in the WNBA draft. So, I think it's complicated, and some of the reasons are you know, completely understandable, and some of them are probably not allowed by the rules.
Amy Donaldson, if you don't mind sticking around, I want to continue this conversation because it's a little bit, in my opinion, like offering these kids a lottery ticket where they say you have to go to a private school to get into a good college, to get into the NBA. So the new trend that we've seen over the last 20 years of these private institutions, these academies, versus the conventional high school program that we've seen has massively changed the world.
Amy's newest report suggests that there's major changes in store. After her story broke, she's going to tell us what those changes are at the high school level next.
Utah knows what it means to be earthquake ready.
Epicenter Magna, Utah was 5.7.
Today, Dave and Dejanovic mark the 2024 Great Utah Shakeout. Listen this hour as Be Ready Utah joins Dave and Debbie for the preparation and planning your family needs for the next emergency on KSL News Radio.
We've been turning our attention this hour to a very important KSL.com investigation. The reporter Amy Donaldson has uncovered a trail of questionable activity involving high school sports at several high schools across Utah. And it has to do with this, allegations of recruiting and offering scholarships to high school, you know, players, kids who are brought over here to play high school sports, which is against the rules. And her investigation, which has been published at KSL.com, has also sparked another investigation, Dave.
And as well as the breaking of the rules, there is a moral issue going on right here, an ethical problem with this recruiting. And it's been an open secret. Having worked in sports for decades, Amy Donaldson and I have worked side by side on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And we have walked. But this is something we've known forever, mm-hmm. Amy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are like, especially as sports reporters, how many questions do you ask? Like, how did you come here? Why did you come here?
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of us don't want to make the kid, you know, these kids are being used, right? They're being promised something. They may or may not be getting it when they get here to the U.S. In some cases, they get it. Some cases, they do not. As you mentioned, Deb, one kid showed up, didn't have a place to stay. Family picked him up. He'd never met the family, didn't know who was supposed to even look for him.
This is a teenager, right?
It's a teenage kid, 15 years old.
From a foreign country.
But yeah, and so in that case, things are working out, but a lot of times they're working out because the people in Utah are really good, helpful people that jump in and fill in the gaps.
And rescue.
Yes.
But one of the cases that you highlighted, one of the kids ended up on their own, living on their own.
Yeah, and that kid bounced, I think, four different living situations.
This is horrible, Amy.
And part of that happened because of COVID. And one of the players that he was living with went home, so he has nowhere to live. He's living in an apartment that he can't pay for by himself.
And again, these are teenagers.
No supervision.
And so you start uncovering paperwork. You start talking to host families.
Begging people to come forward, go on the record. You know the drill.
You try to get schools to tell their side of the story on this.
Most of them will not even take my phone calls. I was promised an interview from the principal of Juan Diego. And then
Catholic high school in Draper.
Yep, Gailey Colosimo told me on a Friday night at a basketball game, call me on Tuesday, call my secretary, set up an appointment. Then he said no. I called Tuesday. They said, he decided he doesn't want to talk to you. I still have had no response. We've talked to the diocese, Debbie Worthen from KSL. We've reached out. Most administrators do not want to discuss this.
It sounds like they're shutting down. Does that sound like to you?
Well, I think here's the thing. Dave's right. It has been happening. It's kind of been this open secret. And everyone thinks that now it's about competitive balance. But the reason that I've been working on this story in my spare time, because as you know, I'm not a daily journalist anymore, is because it is a human rights issue. These are children, and they are being told something and brought here, and their parents are not here to make sure that it's happening. Nobody's making sure they're okay. In 2020, the National Federation wrote an article saying that this was happening across the country, and nobody was keeping track of these kids. How do we know we haven't even already lost kids? We don't even know. There are girls that have come here. We don't know them. There's no list. Nobody has to make sure. There are rules that you have to submit a transfer form for any international student. Not happening sometimes.
And one of the things that's being promised, especially to these 15, 16-year-old kids, is, hey, you've got to come to our private institution, our private academy, because when you look at the best colleges, where are they recruiting? They're recruiting from these very exclusive, excellent basketball programs.
They don't even know. This is what one mom told me, a mom from another country. She said, I don't understand the American school system. I believe everything they say. I believe what they told me, because all I know is America loves sports. America is where you go if you want to be successful at sports.
Amy, you've been doing some excellent reporting on this. You can see Amy's stories at KSL.com. The High School Activities Association now involved as well. Mm-hmm. Personally, I would like to see outside involvement beyond the High School Activities Association to take a really strong look at what has been going on and making sure none of these kids have somehow been neglected or victimized. Let's start with the Activities Association. What are they going to do about this?
They are investigating the recruiting, and several schools are involved in that investigation. But I think what you're saying over and above, I hope that I'm just going to keep reporting, because I'm not limiting mine to who's winning and who's not winning and who's playing and who's not playing. I include that in my reporting, but my reporting is really about the fact that these are children and they're being treated as commodities. And what are we doing about it? How is this happening? And it's not just Utah.
And private institutions don't play by the same rules as public schools.
Well, when they're a member of an association, they are supposed to.
And they are members of the Activities Association.
Currently. Right. They can also go independent. So here's the other thing. If these schools choose to take their basketball programs or their soccer programs or whatever independent, so they would not be a member of the association, like Wasatch Academy has done with their boys' basketball program, does that solve this problem? Do we still have kids in foreign countries being told something and then coming here and being delivered something else? Are they safe?
And there is, you're saying, no list that you can look at.
Who's in charge? Who makes sure? Like the National Federation said, who's keeping track of these kids? We don't even know how many are at a certain school.
Unreal.
Nobody has to do, nobody's even checking to make sure that if you are running a school that you're actually reporting the information you're supposed to report. I got an I-20 from one student, which is something the school issues so that they can get a visa from Homeland Security.
So that's a federal form.
A federal form. It is not correct. Nobody's asking a question. Nobody cares. Whose violation is it?
Have you reached out to Homeland Security?
I've reached out. I haven't yet to find a human being to talk to that wants to talk to a reporter.
Amy, keep it up.
Yeah.
Keep
it up. You a parent? Happy to help you. Nope. Don't want to comment. We don't comment on that.
Amy Donaldson, excellent reporting, important reporting. And we will continue to not only have you on the show, but watch your stories as they drop up. KSL.com, you've got another one coming out soon.
Next week.
Next week. Okay, we'll keep an eye on that and have you back on. Thank you so much, Amy Donaldson. Been researching at length for a couple of years now, many years, what is happening with international students being brought to Utah. And it's just, to me, Dave, this is just, it's just heartbreaking. But I'm very glad that Amy's exposing this.
Debbie, I can tell you... I've seen teams, and now remember, Utah has about 1-2% black athletes or black population here in Utah. I've seen teams that are 85-90% black kids that are playing on this team. The numbers don't work out. So, again, when we say this has been an open secret, the recruiting, it's happened on a small level. Amy's focusing on the international side of things, but this has been a problem, and we have turned a blind eye because we love sports and we love dynasties.
It's the Great Utah Shakeout. Dave and Debbie are live from Evergreen Junior High in the Granite School District on KSL News Radio.
I'm looking forward to speaking to a professional who understands how to make buildings as safe as possible when it comes to an earthquake. As we round out our live coverage of the Great Shakeout, we're going to speak with a structural engineer. He's been in the business for a very long time, Dave, and I think there's some important questions that we all want to know, like, what era is our house built? Do we need to make sure that it's actually more sound? And what things, steps can we take? So let's get Doug Hancock on the line right away. He's a structural engineer, a Taylorsville warrior.
That's right.
All right. So you grew up in Utah. You've been all over it sounds like all over the world and all over the country, analyzing buildings. And you said something to me right after the New Jersey, New York quake. You reached out to me over X. That really struck me, and it's like, you don't want people to be scared to be in buildings. And I love what you said to me, because I am scared. So what do you say to people who are nervous about being inside a building when it starts to shake, Doug?
Well, fear thrives in the absence of knowledge. And so I want to kind of spread some information around so that we don't have to worry quite so much. It's not surprising that modern seismic design began in California. You know, after the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco, we really started to think about how we could better design our buildings. And it didn't take off right away until 1933. They had a Long Beach quake that really got the design rocking and rolling, so to speak. Out of all that, there's a thing called the Unified Building Code that came out of those earthquakes. And by the 1950s, we were starting to build our structures by that code. And it didn't take long to find out that concrete and brick and masonry buildings, they don't do too well in earthquakes. That code, that's our Bible to design buildings. It eventually became what's called the International Building Code. And it's a bunch of equations that we look at just to make sure these buildings hold up. There's no such thing as an earthquake-proof building, but we're getting really, really good at earthquake-resistant buildings. Every time there's a quake, we go in and we study what failed, what didn't, what worked. And if you remember back in 1994, there was a pretty good-sized earthquake in Northridge, California.
Yeah.
The good thing about that quake is there was just a huge variety of buildings to look at. All kinds of different materials were used, all kinds of different structures. And we were able to look at how all these different things interacted with that strong earthquake. And from that, we made some pretty significant changes to the building codes. And so from about 1995 to 2000, those building codes really improved our ability to keep a building up. An engineer's number one goal in designing a building is that the building stay up long enough for people to get out of the building. If we have to tear down a building after an earthquake, but everyone survived, we call that a win.
That's amazing.
That's a great point. And I remember looking at the pictures of the Taiwan earthquake, and you had buildings that were leaning at a 20 or 30 degree angle. They were still holding up. But can you give me an idea, what era of home should I be concerned about here in Utah?
A lot of that depends on what the home is made out of. If it's a wood frame home, you're in pretty good shape. Wood really reacts to earthquakes well. It flexes, it bends. If your home is built before 1950, you probably want to take a good look at it. If it's wood, after 1950, you want to take a look at how it's connected to the foundation. The wood's going to do okay. It might bounce off the foundation a little bit. But if your home was built after the 2000s, I would be perfectly comfortable in a home there because of the building codes that we were able to develop. Again, mostly from the Northridge quakes. You want to be concerned if your house or your building is unreinforced masonry, brick and things like that, without any steel in it. That's what really causes the catastrophic failures. You see those in countries like Turkey and Haiti. That's where so many of the unfortunate deaths come from, is they just don't have access to the materials to reinforce it with steel.
Well, such great information. Thank you. I actually feel a lot better. My wooden home. I feel good about it.
Doug, thank you.
Yeah, Doug Hancock is a structural engineer.
That was great. Great information, because I think a lot of people do wonder, you know, it was, when my home was built, it was built in this era.
Yeah.
How was it built? Is it built under these certain codes or not? That's super helpful information. Doug, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your expansive expertise on, you know, involved in structural engineering for a number of years. We're going to keep your number handy, because we have lots of, you know, earthquake questions that come up over time. And so we'll give you a call in the future. Thanks, Doug.
Another little nugget that he dropped in there that I loved. He said, we care about saving lives,
yeah,
right? So if we have to tear down a building, that is fine. But if it stays together long enough to get everybody out, then that's the win.